Edward Heath. And now we present the first episode of a new radio drama series, The Death of Mary, Queen of Scots. Part 1, The Beginning.
You are Mary, Queen of Scots?
I am.
Take this, Mary, Queen of Scots.
Episode 2 of The Death of Mary, Queen of Scots can be heard on Radio 4 almost immediately.
She's dead.
No, I'm not. That
was episode 2 of The Death of Mary, Queen of Scots, adapted for the radio by Bernard Hollowood and Brian London. And now, Radio 4 will explode.
Oh dear, the radio's exploded.
Oh, well, what's on the television then?
Looks like a penguin.
Now, I didn't mean what was on the TV set. I meant what programme?
Oh, well, I'll switch it on.
Tall and tender and young and lovely, a girl from the island.
It's odd that penguin being there, isn't it? What's it doing there?
Standing.
I can see that.
If it laid an egg, it will fall down the back of the television set.
We'll have to watch that, unless it's a male.
I hadn't thought of that.
It looks fairly much.
Perhaps it's from next door.
Next door? Penguins don't come from next door. They come from the Antarctic.
Burma?
Why did you say Burma?
I panicked.
Perhaps it's from the zoo.
Which zoo?
How should I know which zoo? I'm not Dr. Bloody Bronowski.
How would Dr. Bronowski know which zoo it was from?
He knows everything.
Oh, I wouldn't like that. That would take all the mystery out of life. Anyway, if it was from the zoo, it'd have property of the zoo stamped on it.
No, it wouldn't. They don't stamp animals property of the zoo. You can't stamp a huge lion.
They stamp them when they're small.
What happens when they molt?
Lions don't molt?
No, but penguins do. There! I run rings round you logically.
Oh! Intercourse the penguin!
Hello. Well, it's just after 8 o'clock and time for the penguin on top of your television set to explode.
How did he know that was going to happen?
It was an inspired guess. And now...
Number 23... The Shin. Number 24. Reginald Maudling's Shin. Number 25. The Nipple. Number 26. Reginald Maudling's Elba. Number 27, The Spanish Inquisition.
Who's in that?
What?
Don't play games with me! Our weapons are fear, surprise, ruthless efficiency, and an almost fanatical... Ooh! Ah! Cardinal Biggles!
Here, Lord.
There's only one thing to do. We must torture him and obtain a signed... Two things to do. One, torture. Two, obtain a signed confession. Three, nothing. There is no third thing. Is that clear? Biggles.
Yes, Lord.
We have to extricate the truth from this unbeliever on pain of torture. Fetch me the soft cushions.
Here, Lord.
Now, infidel, confess.
I don't know what you're talking about.
All right. Cardinal Biggles, poke him with the soft cushions. Confess! Confess! Confess!
It doesn't seem to be hurting him, Lord.
Have you got all the stuffing up one end?
Yes, Lord.
Ah! He must be made of stronger stuff. Get the comfy chair!
A comfy chair.
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 Comfy chair. Comfy chair.
While they are all saying the comfy chair, here's question one of our special sound quiz. Question one: what famous person is this getting up in the morning? Yes, it was the film director Visconti. 5 points. An Italian film director is not sufficient.
And now, the moment you've been waiting for! Your chance to be like Sir Laurence Olivier, Sir Alec Guinness, and Laurence Harvey in the privacy of your own living room. Yes, all you need is this record and the script supplied with it, and you too can be a great actor! You will be playing the part of Montague, the forceful yet bitter, disillusioned and zany Marxist tycoon in this new play by a very good bearded playwright. Other great British and Welsh actors will be playing only minor roles. Now is your big chance, just follow the script as we present... Evil, starring...
Insert your name here.
As Montague.
A police station in Repton.
Morning, Super.
Morning, Wonderful.
Nasty business up at the tower, sir.
Oh, yes? What's happened?
Montague shot himself.
Dead?
Right so, sir. Blood everywhere.
We apologise for an error in this be a great actor in your own living room section of the record. Owing to an error in the selection of the play, the character of Montague does not appear to speak throughout the production. So, let's go straight on to number two in your scripts. All quiet on the Western Front. You are Charles, just back from the war, and to help you become a great actor, a buzzer will go when it is your turn to speak.
All quiet on the Western Front. Adapted for radio by Jeff Astle and Jean Genet. Episode 8, Charles returns to Berkeley Manor.
Oh, Charles, Charles, Charles!
Charles. I never thought I'd see you again. Oh, that's wonderful news. But why? Are you... Where? Oh, no. Yes, Charles? Oh, I love you, too. But what? Shut off? Completely?
Charles ever play football again? Does Asquith really know what is happening to the chaps in France? And is Belinda such good as everyone says? Don't miss next week's exciting episode.
Last week, London Theatre Goers saw the opening of Neville Shunt's latest West End success, It All Happened on the 11:20 from Hainault to Red Hill, via Horsham and Reigate, calling at Carshalton Beaches, Malmesbury, Tooting Bec and Croydon West. In this, as in his earlier nine plays, Shunt attempts to express the human condition in terms of British Rail. A report now from our own theatre critic, Gavin Millar.
Some people have made the mistake of seeing Shunt's work as a load of rubbish about railway timetables, but clever people like me who talk loudly in restaurants see this as a deliberate ambiguity, a plea for understanding in a mechanised ethos. The points are frozen, the beast is dead. What is the difference? What indeed is the point? The point is frozen, the beast is laid out of Paddington. The point is taken. If La Fontaine's elk would spurn Tom Jones, the engine must be our head, the dining car our esophagus, the guard's van our left lung, the cattle truck our shins, the first class compartment the piece of skin at the nape of the neck, and the level crossing an electric elk called Simon. The clarity is devastating, but where is the ambiguity? Over there, in a box. Shunt is saying the 8:15 from Gillingham when in reality he means the 8:13 from Gillingham. The train is the same, only the time is altered. Ecce homo, ergo elk. La Fontaine knew its sister and knew her bloody well. The point is taken, the beast is molting, the fluff gets up your nose. The illusion is complete. It is reality, the reality is illusion, and the ambiguity is the only truth. But is the truth, as Hitchcock observes, in the box? No, there isn't room. The ambiguity has put on weight. The point is taken, the elk is dead, the beast stops at Swindon, Chabrol stops at nothing. I'm having treatment, and La Fontaine can get knotted.
Good evening. Welcome to the Festival Hall for the first of three concerts given by Emile Gilbert to celebrate the 131st anniversary of the birth of Tchaikovsky. Gilbert stars tonight with Tchaikovsky's Contessa Paduana.
Oh dear, Gilbert has trodden on his violin. He's put his foot through the bridge and sat on the soundpost. Is he going to attempt to finish the piece? I think he is. He's picked up the sound case and fingerboard of this beautiful 17th century instrument, actually made by Nicola Amati at Cremona, and he's trying to wedge them under his chin. But no, it's no good. The applause you can hear now is because the leader of the orchestra is going over to Gilbert to lend him his own violin. By no means a lesser instrument than Gilbert's. It is, in fact, a Stradivarius. So this is a very sporting gesture. And now Gilbert prepares once again to play Tchaikovsky's Contessa Paduana. Oh dear, the end's come off. He's caught the peg box in one of the uprights of his music stand, and in trying to get it out with his ear, he's completely snapped off the fingerboard. What a pity. I've certainly never seen this happen before in the Festival Hall, and the leader of the orchestra's not looking very pleased. In fact, he's punched Gilbert in the face. There's a bit of blood, but Gilbert has managed to snatch another instrument from the second violins, and he's climbing off the way up towards the organ, and he's going to have yet another bash at Tchaikovsky's Contessa Paduana. And he's crushed the soundbox with his chin on the second bar there. This really isn't his day. And now the conductor, Otto Klemperer, is hopping across the stage towards Gilbert and trying to poke at him with a stick. I must say this is amazing. It's the first time in the Festival Hall that I've seen a violinist of Gilbert's calibre poked with a stick. And one of the oboists has leapt onto Klemperer's back and is pulling his hair out. I must say it's wonderful to see the loyalty which a great soloist like Gilbert can still command amongst his fellow musicians. In fact, several of the cellists have thrown off their clothes and are making a vast human pyramid, standing a full 30 feet above the smoke and flames drifting across from the blazing wind section. And through the smoke I can see, yes, I can see the timpanist, one of Britain's best, has lashed himself and a Japanese friend to the kettle drum and is rolling off the stage towards the pit of ordure that has opened up under the first six rows of the stalls. Whilst throughout this, the rather unpleasant business of prizing Gilbert out from between the organ pipes is being undertaken by men of the Royal Engineers. And Gilbert is half out. He's got an army violin, and he's having another go at the Contesano Paduano, and he's playing beautifully. Oh, but oh dear! One of the Royal Engineers has stuck a crowbar through his chest, and he's dropped the violin. And these very fit young leopards have pounced upon it and are already taking bits of it across to Herr Willy Brandt on the other side of the stage. While the police have erected barriers now to keep people away from the rubble, and as fighters swoop down to bomb the last pockets of resistance, we go on to the next part of our programme. The Sonatina in E-sharp by Antonio Vivaldi, played by a Pablo Casals during his 400-foot plunge into a bucket of boiling fat.
Morning. Well, what you got?
Well, there's egg and bacon, egg, sausage and bacon, egg and spam, egg, bacon and spam, egg, bacon, sausage and spam, spam, bacon, sausage and spam, spam, egg, spam, spam, bacon and spam, spam, sausage, spam, 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 bacon, spam, tomato and spam, 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 egg and spam, 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 bacon, spam, 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 spam. Or lobster thermidor crevettes with the Bolognese sauce served in the Provençal manner with shallots and aubergines garnished with truffle pate, brandy and a fried egg on top and spam.
Have you got anything without spam?
Well, the spam egg, sausage and spam. That's not got much spam in it.
I don't want any spam.
Why can't you have egg, bacon, spam and sausage?
That's got spam in it.
Hasn't got as much spam in it as spam, egg, sausage and spam, has it?
Could you do me egg, bacon, spam and sausage without the spam then? What do you mean? I don't like spam. Spam, 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 spam,
spam, spam, spam, spam, spam, spam, spam, spam, spam, spam, egg, bacon, spam and sausage without the spam!
I don't like spam!
Shh, dear, don't cause a fuss. I'll have your spam. I love it. I'm having spam, 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 baked beans, spam, spam, spam and spam! Spam, 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 spam,
spam, spam, spam, spam, spam, spam! Baked beans are off!
Well, could I have her spam instead of the baked beans, then?
You mean spam? Spam, 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 spam,
adjourn that court.
Oh, thank you, Hen. I've had a bitch of a morning on the bench. I could stamp my little feet the way those QCs carry on.
Don't I know it, love?
Objection here, objection there, and that nice constable giving that evidence so well. Beautiful speaking voice. Well, after a bit, there was nothing I could do except bang my gavel.
You what, love?
I banged my gavel. I did the silencing court bit. Oh, if looks had killed that prosecuting counsel, been for 30 years. How did your summing up go?
Well, I was quite pleased, actually. I was trying to do it in butch voice, you know, what the jury must understand. And you know, they loved it.
I bet they did.
I could see that foreman eyeing me.
Really?
Yes, Tiki Devil. Anyway, I finished up with...
Was it that tall man with the very big...
No, just a minute, I must tell you. I finished up with... The actions of these vicious men are a violent stain on the community, and the full penalty of the law is hardly strong enough to deal with their ghastly crimes.
Super.
And I waggled my wig. Just ever so slightly. It was a stunning effect.
Oh, I bet it was. You remember that time I wore that super striped robe in the manslaughter case?
Oh, right, the figure hugger.
Very figure hugger.
It was
yes,
lovely.
I got it from Revell.
Ah,
you know,
that's
right. A special place where they do these. Just off the buttocks.
Good evening and welcome to Stake Your Claim. And first this evening, we have with us Mr. Norman Vowles of Gravesend, who claims he wrote all Shakespeare's works. Mr. Vowles, I understand you claim that you wrote all those plays normally attributed to Shakespeare.
Now that is correct. I wrote all his plays, and my wife and I wrote his sonnets.
Mr. Vowles, these plays are known to have been performed in the early 17th century. How old are you, Mr. Vowles?
43.
Well, how is it possible for you to have written plays performed over 300 years before you were born?
Oh, well, this is where my claim falls to the ground.
Ah.
There's no possible way of answering that argument, I'm afraid. I was only hoping you would not make that particular point, but I can see you're more than a match for me.
Mr. Vowles, thank you very much for coming along.
My pleasure.
Next, we have Mr. Bill Wymis, who claims to have built the Taj Mahal.
No.
I'm sorry?
No.
I thought you claimed...
Well, I did, but I can see I won't last a minute with you.
Next...
I was right.
We have Mrs. Mittelschmerz of Dundee, who... Mrs. Mittelschmerz, what is your claim?
That I can burrow through an elephant.
Now, you've changed your claim, haven't you? You know we haven't got an elephant.
Oh, haven't you? Oh, dear.
You're not fooling anyone, Mrs. Mittelschmerz. In your letter, you quite clearly claim that, you could be thrown off the top of Beachy Head into the English Channel... and then be buried.
No, you can't read my writing.
It's typed.
Says elephant.
Mrs. Mittelschmerz, this is an entertainment show, and I am not prepared to simply sit here bickering. Take her away, Heinz.
Here, no, leave me alone.
No sign of land. How long is it?
That's a rather personal question, sir.
You stupid git. I mean, how long has it we've been in the lifeboat? You've destroyed the atmosphere now.
I'm sorry.
Shut up. I'll start again.
Still no sign of land. How long is it?
33 days, sir.
33 days?
We can't go on much longer.
I didn't think I destroyed the atmosphere. Shut up.
I don't think I did.
Of course you did.
Did you?
Yes, I think. Shut up, shut up!
Still no sign of land. How long is it?
33 days, sir.
Have we started again?
Still no sign of land. How long is it?
33 days, sir.
33 days?
We can't go on much longer, sir. We haven't eaten since the fifth day.
We're done for.
Shut up, Maudling. We've just got to keep hoping. Someone may find us.
How are you feeling, Captain?
Not too good. I feel so weak.
We can't hold out much longer.
Listen, chaps, there's still a chance. I'm done for. I've got a gammy leg and I'm going fast. I'll never get through, but some of you might. So, you'd better eat me.
Eat you, sir?
Yes, eat me.
Ugh, with a gammy leg?
You didn't eat the leg, Thompson. There's still plenty of good meat. Look at that arm.
It's not just the leg, sir.
What do you mean?
Well, sir, it's just that...
Why don't you want to eat me?
I'd rather eat Johnson, sir.
So would I, sir.
I see.
Settle then. Everyone's going to eat me.
Oh, well...
What, sir?
Go ahead, please, but I won't...
Oh, nonsense, sir. You're starving. Duck in.
No, it's not that. What's the matter with Johnson, sir? Well, he's not kosher.
That depends how we kill him, sir.
Yes, that's true. But to be perfectly frank, I like my meat a little more lean. I'd rather eat Hodges.
Oh, well, all right.
I still prefer Johnson.
I wish you'd all stop bickering and eat me.
Look, I tell you what. Those who want to can eat Johnson, and you, sir, can have my leg, and we'll make some stock from the captain, and then we'll have Johnson cold for supper.
Oh, no, that's a good idea.
Excellent thinking.
Or else we could have Hodges in the morning.
Well, the bowels. We could have some kind of Johnson kedgeree.
Naval officer, I abhor the implication that the Royal Navy is a haven for cannibalism. It is well known that we now have the problem relatively under control, and that it is the RAF who now suffer the largest casualties in this area. And what do you think the Argyle's at in Aden? Arabs? Yours, etc., Captain B.J. Smithick, in a white wine sauce with shallots, mushrooms and garlic.
Well, I'm ever so glad they abolished hanging, because that black cap just wasn't me.
Oh, yes, black makes you look so washed out.
Do you remember the Glasgow treason trial?
Oh, yes, I wore a body stocking all through it.
No, I meant the party afterwards.
Oh, ah, silly me. You were walking out with that very butch foreman.
Yes, I know what they mean by well hung jury.
Oh, smacky little body. Oh, I had a magistrate in Bradford.
Funnily enough, I had one yesterday.
Oh, did he go?
Yes, the full 5 years.
Excuse me, is this the undertaker's?
Yep, that's right. What can I do for you, Squire?
Well, I wonder if you can help me. My mother has just died, and I'm not quite sure what I should do.
Oh, well, we can help you. We deal with stiffs.
Stiffs?
Yeah. Now, there's three things we can do with your mum. We can bury her, burn her, or dump her.
Dump her?
Dump her in the Thames.
What?
Oh, did you like her?
Yes.
Oh, well, we won't dump her then. Well, what do you think, a burner or a burier?
Which would you recommend?
Well, they're both nasty. If we burn her, she gets stuffed in the flames, crackle, 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 which is a bit of a shock if she's not quite dead, but quick. And then you get a box of ashes which you can pretend are hers.
Oh.
Or, if you don't want to fry her, you can bury her, and then she'll get eaten up by maggots and weevils, nibble, 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 which isn't so hot if, as I said, she's not quite dead.
I see. I'm not very sure. She's definitely dead.
Where is she?
She's in this sack.
Let's have a look. Oh. She looks quite young.
Yes, she was.
Fred!
Yeah?
I think we've got an eater.
I'll get the oven on.
Excuse me, are you suggesting we should eat my mother?
Yeah, not raw. Not raw, we'd cook her. She'd be delicious with a few French fries, a bit of broccoli and stuffing. Delicious.
What? Well, actually, I do feel a bit peckish. No, I can't.
Look, we'll eat your mum. Then, if you feel a bit guilty about it afterwards, we can dig a grave and you can throw up into it.
All right.
If you've enjoyed listening to this record, you'll enjoy Oscar Tritt's second LP, Folk Songs of the Spanish Inquisition.
Knees up, Mother Brown. Knees up, Mother Brown. Knees up, knees up, don't get the knees up, Mother Brown. That's right. Knees up, Mother. We must keep up. We must be careful what you do here.